This is the Inno the Buzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Welcome to episode number 51 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, designed to help smart businesses with an interest in innovation become even more innovative. In this episode, my guest is Michael Mapes of Graveyard Innovation, a results-based innovation firm that helps businesses design and execute winning strategies because, as Michael puts it, we like to win. In the interview, we talk about innovation as providing relevant value to your audience, about the importance of always asking questions and really listening and hearing what our clients are saying. This is another fascinating and educational interview. Michael's energy is infectious and his unique view of value-based marketing has many lessons for all businesses. So let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Michael Mapes. Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored to have with me here today on this episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from Kansas City in the USA, Michael Mapes of Graveyard Innovation. Welcome to the podcast, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
It's a privilege. Yeah, it's a privilege to have you here.
Hopefully. Now, Michael is... you got to say that at the end of the interview.
Do I? Okay. Now, Michael's the founder of Graveyard Innovation, which is a results-driven innovation firm that helps businesses, entrepreneurs, leaders, and organizations create and execute winning campaigns so they can grow. Now, I really like the comment you make somewhere on your website. I think we design and execute winning strategies because we like to win. So that's for me, encapsulates what you're about as I read your website. And Michael's also a best-selling author. His book, The Conscious Entrepreneur's Guide to Creating Wealth, is available on Amazon. So, Michael, great to have you on the podcast. And now, before we start talking about digital marketing, innovation, and all those kind of things, let's find out a little bit more about your background. What did you want to be when you were a young child?
Well, I know the answer to this question because I just went through three boxes of stuff from my childhood that my mother sent me. And so I have actual evidence of this. But I wanted to be a figure skating baker. So
figure skating baker.
Yes.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah. I mean, not a baking figure skater either, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. I just thought I like figure skating. I like cookies. Why not perform and bake? I can't cook, and I'm not coordinated, so it didn't really pan out.
But didn't pan out, but you were already thinking out of the box.
So there was a sign there.
Yeah.
Not all innovations succeed, you know, and that's important to remember.
That's right, yeah. But there's feedback, isn't there? It's feedback. If it's not working out, change it. Because I think one of the other things you've said on your website or maybe it was in a podcast interview that I listened to, you said stop doing what other people are doing and start doing something better.
Yeah, I think that takes a lot of testing, you know, and it takes a lot of listening to your own experience. And I think sometimes that's very difficult for us to do, especially for those people who have an original idea. Because if it's truly original, that means it's not in the world yet, right? And so there's a certain amount of people aren't going to get it until they do. And you may need to shape a conversation slowly over time. But on the other hand, that doesn't mean you should be immune or allergic to criticism, right? And you need to also know when something is just not working or when it's not right. And I think that takes a lot of discernment and a lot of listening to yourself.
Mm, yeah, that's a really good point. So how did you get into the business of marketing and marketing coaching then?
It's not something I ever considered or something I even knew was a thing. You know, looking back, I could certainly see different entrepreneurial tendencies that I had, but I mostly thought that they were liabilities. You know, I thought I was a very lazy person. I thought I was an uncommitted person. I thought, why can't I pay attention? There were things I just didn't know about myself. And, you know, we were encouraged to be pretty much whatever we wanted. But to me, I mean, a business owner was like, they owned a jewelry store or a restaurant. You know, it wasn't, I didn't really get what it meant to be entrepreneurial. What I cared about, what I've always cared about, is intuition, listening to yourself, because being gay and growing up in a very small conservative area, I just think I had a choice very early on. I could listen to what other people were saying, or I could listen to some voice inside myself that said, that's not really right. There's nothing wrong with you. And for me, books and my imagination, I had a grandmother who really encouraged my imagination. I escaped into that. And I'm very grateful because I didn't turn off the parts of my brain that tell me what can be different, right? Whether or not I see it around me. And so I had always cared a lot about listening to that inner voice because it seemed to me that basically my life worked better when I did. And it didn't seem to work out much at all when I listened to everybody else's voice, you know, everyone but myself. So what I was initially interested in at 19, when I lost a family member very close to me, was getting connected to that. I mean, it was much more of a personal growth journey, a spiritual journey. I was finishing college and I started a business at 19, teaching, talking about intuition, spirituality, personal growth. That's what I cared about. At some point, you know, I thought, okay, I'm making some money at this. I wonder what it could be. And along that path, I just came across people, these incredible people who were changing lives and making a difference. And yet they couldn't get three people to their workshop, right? And I'm so damn stubborn. I mean, I would just fail until I succeeded. And I got super interested in helping these people because I just thought, well, that's a shame, right? And shifted my business up eventually to helping them market, helping them sell, helping them, you know, bring their message forward. But I'm also a very honest person. And I think the best personal growth tool is the mirror, right? There's reality and not reality. And I believe a reality-based life is a better life. And when I went to the mirror after 3.5 years, you know, building $250,000 business, I mean, I did everything I wanted. I got everything that I wanted in my life. But something was missing. And for me, the needle wasn't moving fast enough. I saw people with high performing characteristics. They were succeeding. And I saw a lot of other people that weren't succeeding. And so I had to go and say, consulting is great. Coaching is great. What's missing? Why isn't it working? What's going on? And what I started to notice was a lot of trends, a lot of things that I thought, why is nobody talking about this? Why is nobody paying attention to this? And you know, we may talk about this more as we go on, but essentially I decided it was time to make a change again. And that was what led to Graveyard Innovation. So basically I think I just followed the signs and I was naive, right? And I definitely recommend it because I wasn't so afraid.
Yeah, there's so many good messages in that. I really love that story. You know, it's starting off by listening to your own inner voice and not being influenced by what other people are saying or thinking. And then, you know, looking at the mirror as a personal growth tool. I really like that analogy. And being naive, I mean, you put it in that term, but really it's about being curious, isn't it? Being insatiably curious and asking the question, what's missing here? Why isn't that working the way it could be working? Or why aren't people doing X, Y, Z, where that would add some value. So really interesting stuff.
The world never felt like that safe to me, you know, with how I grew up. And I think, you know, I wish every child could feel safe and secure, right? And every person could feel safe and secure. But I think because what I was told was supposed to be safe wasn't, I had much more of a value system around experiencing travel, being a gypsy, learning. That was kind of what I valued. Like, I knew that things were always changing. So it doesn't mean it was always easy. There were a lot of hard times, but I think I was just more adaptable, right? I didn't expect things to be the same day to day. And so I didn't waste so much energy when they weren't.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Graveyard Innovation then and what you do in the business.
Yeah, I'll do my best. I tell people, right, like the fact that I can explain it in an hour is pretty good considering it took me three when we began. So at some point I will have this down to the best 1 minute you've ever heard.
Okay.
And I would tell that to people. I mean, mostly don't rush to get your elevator pitch. Just talk about your idea long enough and eventually that will emerge, right? So what essentially we do is, like you said, we design and execute winning strategies. And what's, I think, unique about us, I guess, or, you know, what our kind of grounding value is reliable originality. So I'm very interested in how can you, with extreme precision, knock it out of the park again and again and again? And what does that look like? And when I was looking around at all of these marketing trends, the one thing that I realized was we were operating under a very fraught from the beginning, but certainly outdated framework. And I think we have Bill Gates to thank for this, right? Which is the content is king philosophy. And I mean, just if you've tried to search Google, I mean, I just kind of thought I became a dumb person who didn't know how to use Google. Because it's very frustrating, right? And what I noticed was there's all this content. Like, I figured out that we have a saturation of value, by which I mean I looked around my house one day, and what did I see? I saw on my end table 8 books, all in partial phases of me reading them. I saw my Kindle full of other books that I was partially reading. Magazines were stacked up on my counter. My phone was blowing up saying delete something because there were so many podcasts or Audible books or things on iTunes University. And I had just spent the last 90 minutes scrolling through Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon, just curating the documentaries that I was going to watch. And I thought, and those were all the good things, right? I mean, those weren't the bad things.
You'd already filtered them.
Exactly. And I could never get to them all. And I realized, oh my gosh, I'm part of the problem. Because if I'm out there producing at this rate, even if it is all excellent, I am in this churn. So what would I need to do to be invaluable and to be noticed when I want to be, right? To turn the light on, get the attention that I want, and then turn it off when I don't want it. And I started looking at who were the people that I followed no matter what. Like, who were the people that I would look them up on Twitter to see what they were doing? They didn't have to tweet me. What were the authors that I was looking for in magazines like Slate, like New York Magazine, like The Atlantic? I didn't have to follow them anywhere. They were compelling enough to me that every couple of months I would check. And what were the publications that I liked, which weren't the publications producing the most content, but were the publications producing a take slightly to the right or to the left of what everyone else is doing? And that's what I started to look at. And as I pulled back from nearly everything that I was doing in marketing, an incredible thing happened. People started to ask me, hey, what are you up to? I wasn't up to anything. I was trying to figure something out. But it just looked interesting by default. And so this kind of has led me to believe that there are some people in the market where producing the most content might be the right approach. I think for most people, it really isn't. It's about producing the most relevant kind of value for your business. And I mean, it's sort of like, I think the Greeks called it kairos, right? This moment where everything comes together. Timeliness, relevance, narrative coherence, narrative fidelity. And really looking at that, and that to me is the future. And then I started figuring out, I don't want to be stuck in a marketing cubicle if the problem is the product or the problem is the team structure. It's like I just realized if I can't look at every part of someone's business, I'm not that interested in it. So we really help clients figure out not just what do they want their business to be, but what is the business trying to be? It is infinitely more interesting, and then really help them create both a product framing, or what most people call positioning, and marketing that is absolutely invaluable, because valuable is not enough anymore.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I love what you said there in so many levels as well. There is so much stuff on the internet and it gets totally overwhelming. And as you say, there's a lot of valuable stuff, even when you filter it out, there's a lot of stuff there and you can't get to it all. I'm in the same
boat as you. We have all these terms like engagement and, you know, I want to give value. Well, everybody, no business doesn't want to give value except pretty unethical, sleazy people, right? Mm. And we have this imprecision in language, right? It's like there's a good kind of engagement. There's an irrelevant kind of engagement. It's like who's engaging? To what end? What does that engagement lead them toward? I think these are really important questions, right? And for me, it's all about like, this is just kind of my personal thing, but the internet to me is the greatest storytelling tool since the human imagination. It is incredible. But what we have used it for is we haven't used it any more than we used libraries before it, because we're not running off to radically new spaces to find new information. We are using the internet as a megaphone to magnify conventional wisdom. And here we have this amazing storytelling tool, and we're producing glorified marketing brochures. That is not the best we can do with this. And so I think that it's like if there was ever a time for like the meritocracy, now is that time, right? And that's what I'm fascinated by.
You're definitely right. There's so much that's really just glorified brochures, and some of them might be exceptionally good, but they're not relevant to anybody, or they're not relevant to the right audience. So one of the things that I always try to focus on is understanding who is your audience and what are they looking for. And, you know, there's an example. I've got an issue with my PCs that I can't solve. There's some random numbers popping up over the screen, and they're just coordinate pairs. They look like coordinate pairs. And I thought, well, surely somebody's experienced this. And so I do an internet search to find a solution. And usually you end up with an answer. For this one, there's all kinds of stuff popping up that's totally irrelevant. So nobody's actually written anything that's easy to find addressing this particular problem, which, you know, that comes back to this: understand who your audience is, what their problem is, what they're looking for, and give them that. And if you do that, then you're getting closer to what you're saying in terms of, you know, what do you need to do to capture that attention when it's needed, and then turn the light back off again.
Exactly the right questions. And I think so much of what we do is pose questions, which are infinitely more valuable than answers. Answers come very cheap, in my view. You can call any psychic hotline, pay $10. If you don't get the answer you want, you can hang up and call back. You know, and if you have a budget of, you know, anywhere from $10 to $50, you'll get an answer. But what questions do is they give a promise about what something could be, and they encourage you to really confront where you are strong and where you are not, where your voice needs to be strengthened and where your voice needs to be refined, or maybe where your voice doesn't need to be at all. And I think I could care very little about people thinking I have an answer, because I think mostly what we do is get to know the client's business. Einstein said if he had an hour to solve a problem, he'd spend 55 minutes in the problem and 5 minutes in solutions. And he didn't say in the frustration, by the way, which I think is a mistake people make. But what he meant by that was that if he examined a problem from enough angles, if he arranged it enough ways, if he daydreamed about it, because, you know, Einstein discovered the theory of relativity while on a train daydreaming, that the answer would become obvious. If you spend enough time with your clients really hearing what they're saying, really listening, right, really absorbing it, really not knowing the answer, eventually a gap in the market is going to emerge. The solution will become very obvious. I started Graveyard Innovation because all I was going to do was tell a couple of my friends and colleagues about what I was seeing, and then I had no clue what I was going to do. But I just trusted, and I talked to a couple of these people, and the first woman I talked to said, okay, I'll hire you. And I said, oh, you've misunderstood. I'm closing my business. And she said, no, not for that, for this. And that happened again and again and again. I never overcame an objection. I never had anyone argue with me about price. I just went to work. And I said to those first few people, you got to tell me if at the end of this, it's not worth what I'm charging. So I know, right? And then we'll work on it. We'll figure it out. So I think people are so, you want to rush a product to market, but if you haven't spent enough time in that, getting to know the psychology of your customers, asking questions, willing to be wrong, staying in the problem, I think it's very hard. Like what you come up with, it just doesn't tend to work.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really great advice. And it reminds me, when I was in the corporate world, we did some work on redesigning our entire research process and product development process. And the redesign was exactly what you're saying. We, you know, focused a whole lot more time on understanding the customer need and the customer problem before going to the development stage. And I remember the first project we kind of used as a prototype to test the process once we'd done the background work on the process. And it was a 4-week turnaround time that we had working with the customer, and we spent 3 weeks understanding the problem. And a lot of people were getting really nervous and saying, you know, hey, we should be doing something. And I was really firm and said, until we understand exactly what we need to do, we can't go to the next step. So let's really focus on that front end.
Yeah, and, you know, I just have to say, like, that is so refreshing to me, because it's sort of like you can do that and fail. You can not do that and fail, right? Mm-hmm. But you can also succeed in a much bigger way. And I think in innovation, there is often more failure, but it is a different kind of failure. You are learning things on the go. You are deciding things. It is a very informed kind of failure, and you're able to pivot very quickly. I don't really meet a bunch of people that are super lazy, don't want to be successful, and don't take action. Mostly what I meet, when I meet people, I'm like, please stop taking action. Because if you yeah. just stood still for 5 minutes, like the direction to take would make sense. And I've gone back to Sun Tzu and reading The Art of War. And there's so much in there, I think, just timeless principles for what it means to be strategic. And it is all about really understanding yourself, understanding your opponent. And if you have no space, you can't do that. I'm all about execution. I'm all about execution with precision. But I don't see the point of rushing off in a direction that is so ill-considered, because it feels good to take a bunch of action. And I think what you said to me, that is taking action, right? Mm. Because it is looking at, considering, and being really, really curious. I think that is a place that really good things emerge, because if you look at customers, right, you can go to customers and ask them what they want. And sometimes producing that is the right thing. But mostly what you find is that customers want something, and because nobody's made that exact thing yet, they don't exactly know how to ask for it, right? Like I look at 2008 in America when Barack Obama became president. If you did a poll of anybody in 2006 or 2007 that said, will the next president be a one-term senator from a very liberal state with the middle name Hussein, right? Nobody on a poll would have said, oh yeah, that's going to be our next president. It would have been so far-fetched, because, you know, nobody knew Barack Obama. But Barack Obama saw these trends, and his team saw these trends, right? And they were able to meet the moment and greet this moment almost perfectly. The country was asking for Barack Obama. It just didn't know to say, we want Barack Obama, right? And I think that's probably what happened in this case you were working on. Like, they knew some of what to ask for, some not, but you just saw something, like giraffes are something that we look to in graveyard innovation because they see above the trees, right? Mm. And that's a lot of what that process, I'm guessing, enabled you to do. And it's really, frankly, refreshing to hear.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, like you say, often the customers don't know exactly. They've got some idea of what they want, usually they have a good idea of what they want, but don't know how to articulate that, or don't know how that might impact on their business. And often it turns out that they need something slightly different.
So exactly. If I only really, ever like had white cake, right? And I kept asking for vanilla cake.
Yeah.
And nobody ever gave me a cinnamon roll. I would have never eaten a cinnamon roll, right? Something far superior to white cake. Like, but yeah. I would just be asking for the thing I knew, right? Instead of the That's thing right. that I might like way more.
Exactly, yeah. So spending that time and getting that understanding is, and, you know, it's not about not taking action. It's about taking action that gives you a better understanding of what then will be the ultimate outcome.
You can do so much damage, I think, right? And that's what we forget. It's action is not neutral. You can diminish yourself. And now there is, you have to know the difference between giving space, being creative, really being strategic, and what a lot of people call strategy. I just do not think it passes for it. And then being in fear, right? You can certainly overanalyze. You can certainly be paralyzed. Sometimes you need a tactic, right? And that's where you are, and it's what you need in the moment. And there again, I think you just, it really is to me knowing yourself, and even more importantly, knowing the value of your company, and are you being true to that value? That to me is the thing that always guides me. If I was being true to this value, what might I be doing? What choice might I be making? It always leads me in the right direction, even if it requires a hard choice in the moment.
Hmm. Yeah, that's something that raises another question for me in terms of what you do. You mentioned somewhere, you know, define your true genius, get yourself esteemed at what you're really exceptional at, and get others to help with the stuff that's not your strength. Mm-hmm. So talk to us a little bit more about that, because I think that's a really good philosophy.
Yeah. I would say look to the thing that you're trying to fix about your personality, most likely, or whatever thing you think is some liability that's keeping you from success, and lean into it, most likely, right? Mm. For me, it was my curiosity, because I thought it was a hindrance. I mean, I heard so many times growing up, Michael, shut up. Stop talking. Why are you asking that question? Like, this is just what we're going to do. So I got it in my head that, you know, I just couldn't learn like other people, and that it was, you know, these questions were wrong, bad. You didn't need to ask them, right? And that, and then I built, you know, my last business, I didn't ask as many questions as I should have. And I regret that. And I try to make up for that now. And I've gone back to most of my clients, and I'll go back to all of them and talk to them about that, because I think it's so, so important. But I thought I had to overcome that, right? Because I thought it meant I was undisciplined. But truly, it has been my greatest gift. Does that mean every moment is a time to be creative? No, that side of me needs a rest too, right? And it would be tyranny to always be innovating, always be creating. There's a time to implement. But what happened when I went back to that was everything just started to work for me in a different way. And I found people that could come in, because it does give me certain liabilities. I'm not as good with like everyday things like around my house or remembering to check my mail, right? Because I'm obsessed with what would be a better way to get the mail, you know? And I'm thinking about things and forgetting them. So there's certain ways I have to calibrate for that, right? But the great thing about it is you had Lisa Wells, I think, on your program. And Lisa and I are great friends. But Lisa and I also have very different personalities, right? And what she's kind of shown me is there's someone who can pick up and, you know, where I'm weak. And that is something that we open the door for, right? For people to come in and do what they do. My mother, I will always be grateful for this, told me very young, never get it in your head that because you might be educated or because you have certain opportunities that you're any better than anyone else, or that any job is any better than any other job, one of the most important jobs is picking up the garbage, right? If we don't have that, there are plagues and disease and a whole bunch of other bad things. It's such honorable work, right? But we need every single person in society, you know, doing what they're meant to do. And I really believe we need to honor that more. And I'll always be thankful for that, right? But I think it's sort of like we try to correct for those. So I'm a person who starts things, and that's basically what I do in my business. I start things, I give them to my team, and then I come back at the end to refine and finish, make sure that they have creative excellence, make sure that we are nearing perfection. It's very important to me. But for a long time, I thought, oh, I have to do every phase of this and like every phase of it, or I'm not committed. So I would say look to whatever thing you are trying to fix and consider what might happen if you simply leaned into that. Because there's often so much brilliance there.
Yeah, that's great advice. And it may well be, I mean, you point out on your website that, you know, a big chunk or 80% of services businesses fail. And I think the statistic is that it's 90% in the first 10 years.
Yeah.
And probably part of the reason for that is exactly what you're saying. They're falling into that trap of I've got to do everything and not focusing on the thing that is really your strength and getting help with the other things.
We're very focused, you know, on Silicon Valley, I think, at this moment, and apps and technological development. And, you know, it's very important. But, you know, Silicon Valley is, it isn't the next wave of innovation. I mean, I truly believe that the next wave of innovation is in services. And now some of that's going to be the meeting between online and offline and the seamless integration of those things. Some of that's going to be bringing technology in. Some of it's going to be just returning. Like, we're all remembering right now that the phone is faster than email, which you sort of think we would have learned when we invented the phone the first time we sent letters, right? So I think I think there's so much potential there. And I'm constantly saying to people, like, why aren't you innovating this? Like, there's so much opportunity right now. There's such a hunger for it. I mean, the CEO, I think of Coca-Cola, you know, they've gone totally to pay for performance in their advertising agencies. Because they've been so disappointed in the level of creativity. And Coca-Cola is a brand that's totally dependent on good advertising. I mean, it essentially is a brand, right? So there's this writing on the wall. And I think I'm so excited to see where that leads us, right? And I am so, we don't have really the right framework in our world quite yet because we don't cultivate these strengths from an early age. And I would just say, you know, I'm all about being optimistic. I try to be a positive person, but don't shortchange yourself. It is not self-deprecation to be clear about your weaknesses or to dismiss them. I really believe if you can get very truthful and honest about those and own them, and you may need to minimize your risks sometimes, but if you can get very clear about those as well, spend some time in that uncomfortableness. Spend some time in like, oh yeah, I'm not good at everything, because too many people are wasting their lives and never getting to their brilliance because they are really good at, or you know, a lot of things. And I say to people, whenever you're done being really good at a lot of things, you will be excellent at one thing and that will set you apart. So we've got to stop getting all our self-esteem from competence and start saving our world with our excellence.
That's great advice. And of course, then coming back to what you said very early in the interview about unique value proposition and don't rush to get to that elevator pitch. It's once you understand what is your point of excellence and your point of difference, that becomes your elevator pitch, doesn't it?
Exactly. You can't win. It's like if you're a new business, right? You can't win every battle all the time. So you're going to be really bad at it because you don't have the language yet. There is so much you don't know, but get clear on what problem you're trying to solve today and what you can be really good at. We couldn't be really good at finishing people's projects in the beginning because you know, it was all innovation. It was all testing. So we couldn't be committed to finishing. But what we were committed to was caring and creativity. So we were honest with the clients about that, right? We didn't make excuses. We didn't try to hide it. And I was comfortable with a client walking away or being seriously irritated with me. Like, I would rather have that than send out something that did not meet my creative standard in the beginning, because I would rather have a client angry and, you know, give them their money back than put bad ideas or something less than our best out into the world. So I had to decide, this is where we're going to be really good today. And these other things, let's do our best. I hope we'll be really good there tomorrow. But I just think in the beginning, we don't have the resources to do all of that. If you are more focused and honest, clients will completely understand. I did not have any clients quit. Were some of them irritated at certain moments? They were. But there are ways to make up for that. And I found they totally respected the process. And it was invaluable to them to see it being built. And really what I found is that it inspired them and encouraged them to do the same thing, to play where they were strong today, to know that they would get some of it right tomorrow.
Hmm. Okay. Now, you mentioned processes. So do you have strict processes that you follow for the coaching plans?
So what we do, what we take clients through, you know, and not every business wants to innovate. And I just want to say that it's totally okay, right? It's like some businesses are more traditional. It's totally fine, right? It's total. You wouldn't want a world where every business was innovating all the time, right? Like you wouldn't, and we don't need it. So we actually take people through a 3-phase process. It's called our strategic storytelling process. Most of our clients have had so much coaching, so much personal growth and development. And what they need is strategy. And that's what we drive. And, you know, in phase one, it's all about creativity. What are the targeted innovations as we see them? What's the narrative? We bring that to the client, right? And mostly in that phase, we're just looking at ideas. In phase two, we shift a little bit and we take 3 months. We are implementing this. We are building a unified digital brand often for them. We're just getting in 3 months everything the client needs. And in this phase, it's all about trust, right? Us going above and beyond, them seeing that we're going to produce the exact right amount for their project. We never tell someone, you're going to get a website at the end of this, you're going to get 17 partnerships at the end of this and 5 videos. They may get that. They may get more. They may get less. But what we're interested in is what's going to drive a result, usually profit. And if we start building a website and then all of a sudden we find that strategic partnerships are just really working right now, we're going to shift gears there, make the money. Oops, sorry about that. And know that we can circle back around at a later date to the website. So really, we produce a lot of stuff, but that is an additional thing, right? We are just committed to the result in this phase and really earning the client's trust. Now, we still have project plans and all of this. And then the third phase, if we feel it's a fit and they feel it's a fit, we invite them into the third phase, which is a pay-for-performance model. We take a modest fee on a sliding scale, very modest, and then we get paid when we earn the client money. Obviously, that's not appropriate for everyone for lots of reasons, but it's kind of like this. The client takes the risk in phase one, we split it in phase two, and we take the risk in phase three. So that's kind of our process at the moment continues to evolve, and it's really about forming a partnership. I felt that if we wanted to be in partnership with our client, we should put our money where our mouth is. We should be able to prove that we can do what we say we can do, and we should take some of the risk. It really incentivizes us to be honest, to be direct, and to make sure that we are working in everybody's aligned interests versus going to them and saying, we need more for this, we need more for that. And for people who need more specific, like they want to run their business as a set of individual projects, we are totally happy to take the proposal, to break that down into steps for them, to give it to them and have them take it to a marketing firm. So we hope that at every phase, people feel like they've gotten the full and complete value of that phase. But of course, we choose businesses that we think will be right for all three. And we tell people that from the beginning, that they could quit anytime. There are no monthly contracts or commitments, but we want them to be there the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the whole philosophy around partnering with your clients and building an ongoing relationship. So it's not, you know, focused on here's a project and when we've done that, we're done and see you later and good luck.
Absolutely.
Because I think that's such an outdated model.
It encourages you to believe your own nonsense, right? And I think that that is, or to blame your clients. Like, there's a lot of people condescending their clients right now. And it's just not my experience. I mean, I think that when you start to see what's right and you build on that and you really are honest with someone when there's an issue and you communicate, but you know that they're trying their best, that you're trying your best. And when you align the interest to the profit of the business, right? If we believe in it, I mean, we have a we have very high standards when it comes to ethics, when it comes to truth. We require, if we're going to take somebody on in the third phase, that they go above and beyond what the FTC recommends for testimonial guidelines and things like that. And so we try to be very honest about where we're coming from, very honest about what we're testing. I have found there is so much more respect. And also, if it's not a fit, you are able to part ways and you're able to do a little bit more for that client so they can feel good about it, right? Without wasting so much time. And I feel you're able to just deal with the conflict versus feeling like you have to go to war with a client to convince them about something.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you see as the biggest challenges in your business right now and what are you doing about those?
Well, I think the biggest challenge right now is the thing I worry about the most is that it seems to me that we are getting to a place where we have more answers than questions. That is a very scary world for me because it starts to shut down the dialogue. You know, it is alarming to me that more than ever, people are surrounding themselves with like-minded people. It's great to do that sometimes, but you know what's also great? Being around not like-minded people. That's the essence of democracy. It's the essence of creativity. I'm very skeptical of a group of people getting together and deciding something for everyone. And that's what I see really right now as the challenge. It's really everywhere. It is, we are just listening to conventional wisdom when, if you look around, it is so clear that has not worked. You see that in politics where somebody says something at 5 a.m. on the news, may or may not be true. They may or may not have done their homework, right? And then by 5 p.m., it seems like this is fact, not because anything changed, but simply because now 5,000 people are saying it instead of one person. You see that same thing in Hollywood where people say, we can't make any movies about things other than giant robots because nobody will go to them. And then, you know, Bridesmaids is produced. It makes all of this money. And it turns out you can. You see that in the music industry where the music industry blames the internet and LimeWire and Napster for its collapse, when in truth it was mismanaging artists for years, and Taylor Swift comes along and shows you can perfectly well sell a number of albums, right? If you know your customers, and if you are, like, again, true to the alignment of your brand. The fact of the matter, and the same thing is true with advertising, we have essentially forgotten about advertising and PR and substituted it for this very vague word called marketing. I mean, people think that there's no room for advertising. I think it's essential. Advertising frames a conversation. That is the only way in a world where there is so much information in a nonlinear world that you can at all control your destiny. We can't psychologically manipulate customers to be at a certain place. Customers have all the power, all the information. But what we can do is frame the conversation so that we are all at least talking about the same thing in the same universe. And people think advertising doesn't work, right? And all these other examples I gave, the fact of the matter is, here's what works. Interesting, relevant, good ideas. And that really doesn't matter if it's a book, a movie, a song, an advertisement, a magazine article. I mean, it just all is what's a good idea, what's interesting, and what engages the customer. I find that so encouraging because we can make anything, right? Mm. We can literally make anything. And I'm encouraged by that. But I worry because with the decreasing questions comes decreasing listening. Yeah. And with decreasing listening comes decreased trust. And with decreased trust comes the collapse of most of what makes our world great. And I think that's very alarming.
Hmm. Yeah, really good points there. Now, you talk a lot about innovation in your business and so on. So I'm interested in what you see as the biggest traps that innovators encounter when they're trying to sell new ideas.
I think that they are unclear. Well, let me kind of put it in esoteric terms and then I'll try to make sense of it. I think that they're unclear about the degree to which they need to step out of coherence. So there's all different degrees of innovation. And for us, innovation, this is not my definition. This is, couldn't even tell you the name of it, but basically some business school person's definition, and I liked it, so I stole it. innovation is idea times commercialization, right?
Yeah.
So it's very important that it's not plus, right? Like, if you have an idea, you don't have 50% of innovation. So it's idea times commercialization. There's all different degrees of it, right? There is Hillary Clinton innovation, which is like getting herself a little bit in line with where the base is now, right? And then minimizing her risk. That's a form of innovation. But she's not introducing a brand new Hillary Clinton to the world. That would be very, very hard. Then there are things that are very innovative, like Henry Ford in the automobile, where people literally have no context for it. And I think you have to know kind of at least vaguely the degree to which you are suspending coherence. Because if you are doing something that is completely new or that people are not going to understand, right, they're not going to understand it. And so that's going to be very different than, oh, I'm innovating the positioning for this product, but a lot is going to stay the same. And so often what happens is because we as humans want to make sense of things, people put something that is very innovative and different into an already existing framework. That is not always a good thing because it can mean that the innovation isn't given what it needs to succeed, right? If I would have forced an elevator pitch into graveyard innovation, I would not have developed most of what I've developed. What it needed was conversation. Right? Because people not understanding it forced me to explain it. That didn't mean I rushed it out to a Fortune 500 company and tried to sell it to them. It wasn't ready for that, right? Yeah. They weren't the people to have that conversation with, nor did I trust everybody to talk to about it. I was very discerning. So I think it's that, right? Like, if you suspend coherence, people aren't going to get it and they're going to try to make it coherent. And that is not always true to what it is. And other times it is totally fine because it's much smaller. And if you're not clear on that, you don't know how to craft a strategy. Anything can work. We can make anything work if we know what we're dealing with. If we're trying to plug a very important change into a system, that is very different than change what the system itself cares about. I think I can give an example. If you are at a party, right? And someone is talking about, or a group of people is talking about a particular subject. One way to innovate that conversation is to say, hey, have you all thought about it this way? And give a counterintuitive or a slightly different take on that subject, right? Mm. And essentially sort of shift the nature of the conversation a little bit, but you are still mostly in the framework of what's being talked about. People will get it. They won't think it's that rude. They may think you're a little odd, but they can engage with it. Another way is to be in that conversation, be so bored by what people are saying, right? And essentially introduce something that seems in no way connected to what they were talking about, right? Now, what probably happens in that conversation is 9 out of 10 people think you're rude and insane, or maybe just the crazy aunt, uncle, cousin, whatever. But one person in that group is like intrigued. What's that person up to? I'm interested. So you got to go have that conversation more time and more times. Eventually, you get enough people who think, hey, what's this person doing? That the conversation itself starts to change. So to me, it's really be clear on the degree to which you are suspending coherence, because that really informs the strategy that you need to have. And it helps you see, when is it okay when people say, I don't understand? And when is it a hindrance?
Hmm. Yeah, that's fascinating advice. And I could go on talking and asking questions for ages, but I think we've almost gone an hour. So I think it's time we moved on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And our innovation round is designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I'm going to ask a series of 5 questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that will inspire everyone and help them do something awesome.
I hope so. I'm nervous about this section, but I'll do my best.
So what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Space. Give themselves space.
Yeah, I like it. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Observe. Just watch what's going on around me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Observe. What's your favorite tool or system for improving your productivity and therefore allowing you to be more innovative?
I think learn about non-obvious things. I do something called Daily Discoveries, which is a folder that I create on Google Drive, and I just collect things as I come across them that are interesting. It just allows me to curate the information without being distracted, and it always comes back to help me be more productive in some way I never expect.
That's fascinating. Yeah, so collect information that seems to be out of the box right now.
Yeah, interesting, but you don't know how it's relevant yet.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. What's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Gosh, I'm so shitty at keeping it on track. I think know fundamentally the result the client wants to get and what you are both committed to. There's projects where time is more important. There's projects where creativity is most important. I mean, what does it mean to be on track? Sometimes that's finishing, sometimes it's not. So I think really clear on what you're committed to.
Yeah, good advice. And what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves? I think we've probably talked about this a lot.
To be, what was that, sorry?
To differentiate themselves.
Well, I think look in the mirror. I think be very, very honest. And, know if you're there. And know if you're not. But I just believe it's like David Mitchell, who wrote Cloud Atlas, The Bone Clocks. In Cloud Atlas, it says, truth is singular. Its versions are mistruths, right? And I think just be willing to look at truth, be willing to have a reality-based life, which is never judgmental. I think that is the thing. The differentiation is already there. And I would say stop asking the question. Like I used to say, what do I want? Now I say, what does this idea want to be, right? And it is so much more powerful because it always reveals itself. And that differentiation, it's already there. You don't have to create it. You just have to discover it. That's it.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, and we'll link to those books that you've mentioned in the show notes also for people to have a closer look at. So what's the future for you then and for Graveyard Innovation?
It is... I always say the future is that we win or somebody does it better and all of these ideas are done. And then I can go sit on a beach and read the Atlantic articles that I've been meaning to read for the past 10 years. My ultimate goal is to be unnecessary, right? Because I look around and I made Graveyard Innovation because the place I wanted to work didn't exist. And I feel like I was hired for this, right? And someday I hope to be fired by it, quite frankly. But that's kind of my ultimate answer to that question. I think in the near term, it is, we're reaching a moment, you know, we've been really behind the scenes, and I think it's now time to roll out some of these ideas. A lot of them are in development. Some of the stuff I said here won't prove true, right? Or it'll change, it'll evolve. And I hope I can always be honest about that. I mean, I hope my ego never gets so big as to think, oh, this is the moment in time where I've, you know, got it figured out. But I think right now what I'd like to do is roll us out to the public a little bit more, share some of these ideas, let the crazy ones know that, yeah, you're crazy, but you're not alone, right? And everyone who's done anything of consequence has confronted people who called them crazy. So I think in the short term, that's what it's about. I want my ideas to be tested, to be debated. I'm not afraid or allergic to criticism or people disagreeing. What I want is for us to really get at the best answer for the entrepreneurs who, you know, I think they're worth it and I think their ideas are worth it. And without that kind of debate and dialogue and discussion, I don't think we're doing them justice, their ideas justice, or the world justice. So I would say that's what's next in the short term.
Mm-hmm. Great. Look forward to that. Yeah. Look forward to seeing more of you out there then. So what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in innovation?
I would say make your art. And for that, I mean, do the thing that you would do anonymously, right? Because as someone who went from thinking no one would ever listen to his ideas to having people listen to my ideas, being adored is much more of a curse than being hated. And I think that when you do the thing, whatever your art is, I mean, my art is really messing around with other people's ideas. That's what fuels me. I've done that my whole life. I do that wherever I go. I don't feel that I'm giving away my value. There's enough ideas, you know, here to play with forever. So I think what's the thing that you would do humbly, that you would do with anonymity, and that you would do if no one cares, and you would be so filled up that whether people noticed or not, you would be okay with it. And you have to find that your whole life has been leading you toward it. But if, like, I don't think there are problems, there's just misarrangements. And so often we've just not arranged our life in the right way. So I would say, what's the thing that you want to make, whether it's a literal thing like a painting, whether it's more of a metaphoric thing, like, you know, playing with ideas, and just do that to solve problems, right? And people will pay you. They really will. I think that's what the world needs. We need to listen to our own voice and we need to trust that. And do I know if it will work? Do I know if we can do it? I don't. But I just know I would rather be smiling, making my art at the end than not. And that is richer to me than anything else in my life. So that's what I would say. Find your art and, you know, and do it.
Okay, that's great advice. Thanks for that, Michael. This has been really fascinating. I've sort of taken pages of notes here and got lots of ideas, and I really appreciate you spending time with us and sharing so much information with us. Where can people reach out and say thank you?
I think eventually we'll have a website that's up, which will be graveyardinnovation.com or marketingisbroken.com. Both those should be rolling out. I say 30 days, could be sooner. But basically, if you want to get a hold of me, I would say just email me. And my email is mmapes, so mmapes at graveyardinnovation.com. Or just call me, 866-798-4084. And anything you need, I've got a business full of old trainings I'm happy to send you. If any of them will help you, happy to point you in the direction of a resource, happy to chat with you about your idea. I think so many people don't take advantage of the opportunities that are before them. So if that feels like an opportunity to you, if I can assist, If you think I'm wrong, that is also a beautiful thing to email me about. but that's what I would say. Just reach out if you feel at all connected to it. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for that, Michael. And we'll put links to all of those contact points in the show notes. So finally, then, who would you like me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
Well, of course. I mean, I want you to interview Hillary Clinton. because I think it would be so interesting. Maybe we could use like Wonder Woman's lasso of truth, so she has to answer non-politically or something, right? So we can get the juicy details, or maybe after 8 years, after she's finishing out her second term. But I had so many answers to this question. I mean, my co-founder, Jeanette Valentino, absolutely incredible. Some of my clients, you know, I think of Kim Miles and Jennifer Wilcobb, who have a side business called Boys Before Business, doing some really interesting things in the relationship niche. I mean, I can just go, I want you to interview every single one of my clients and every single one of my team members. That's what I want. Any of them or anybody you choose, because I mean, listening to people we don't know is just as valuable to us, quite frankly.
Okay, well, we'll get a list of people from you then, Michael. That's really great. But in the meantime,
how many Michaels does it take to change a light bulb? And it's like you're asking the wrong question. You know, so that's kind of my answer to that. You're asking the wrong question. We'll let you answer.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get a list of people from you, and we'll be in touch with those people. So Jeanette, Kim, Jennifer, and all those other clients of Michael's, stay tuned. So thanks so much, Michael, for sharing your time and your insights with us today. This has been absolutely fascinating, and we've gone over an hour now, which is, I really appreciate you spending so much time with us. I've enjoyed this immensely and learned a lot, and I'm sure our audience will as well. So I wish you all the best for the future of Graveyard Innovation, and let's keep in touch.
Absolutely, and please keep doing this. I don't think the world is suffering from too many innovative voices right now.
All right, thanks.
I hope you enjoyed meeting Michael as much as I enjoyed interviewing him. There's a lot of fabulous advice and lessons in this interview. All the show notes for the episode will be at innovabiz.com.au/Michael Mapes. That is MICHAELMAPES. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.com.au/Michael Mapes. That'll have all of the links and everything that we spoke about in this episode. Now, Michael suggested I interview his co-founder, Jeanette Valentino, and his clients, Kim Miles and Jennifer Wilcobb of Boys Before Business, on a future Innova Buzz podcast. So, Janet, Kim, Jennifer, keep an eye on your inboxes for an invitation from me for the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Michael Mapes. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate your audience. Pop over to iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts and subscribe so you'll never miss a future episode. While you're there, you might leave us a review, because reviews help us get found and your feedback helps us to improve. If there's anything you'd like us to cover or questions you want answered on a future podcast, please send them to us. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from Innova Biz. Remember, if you don't innovate, you stagnate. So think big. Be adventurous and keep innovating.